Does the Bible make clear in the cosmic conflict God sets limitations on himself and on humans? Welcome to The Good Word. I'm Alden Tonson, Emeritus Professor of Old Testament at Walla Walla University School of Theology. I'm your host and study guide author. The theme for our discussions this quarter is God's love and justice, and our topic for this week is rules of engagement. So, let's go to our leading question. Does the Bible make clear that in the cosmic conflict, God sets limits on himself and on humans?
I think there are times when God says he has marked out the boundaries of people. That seems to be one of them. I like in Revelation chapter 6, under the fifth seal, the souls under the altar, they cry out for justice and vengeance from God. And he sadly, you know, to their disappointment, says, you have to wait a while. Here's a white robe. You're righteous. And then he says, I have more of your number who need to die the way you do. But when that number is hit, then I'll bring an end to your suffering. It's not a helpful comment, perhaps, but it does suggest there's a limit.
Well, and I wonder sometimes if we look for limits, if we ascribe to God things that God never did. I look at this story, and I think sometimes we take these stories and we kind of summarize them and we say, well, Elijah called fire down from heaven, a pretty spectacular manifestation of God's approval. And so in the same way, look at the way that God approved of the way he slaughtered all of the prophets. And when you do it in kind of a big picture like that, it can sound rather wild. But you look a little bit closer and you say, wow, wait a minute. Was that a part of God's approval? Was that within the scope of what God wanted when God brought about this story? It seems like Elijah kind of goes rogue there at the end when he says, gather up all the prophets, and he takes them down and slaughters them, sees the prophets of the Baal, and my heart just pauses there and said, Was this God that asked him to do that, or has Elijah gone rogue in this story? And is this entire story what God wanted, or do we have other elements in here that we need to be cautious of?
Well, again, I go back to the Old Testament. There are bodies all over the place, all the time. And that situation,
we're not used to that today. We don't see dead bodies very often.
We don't. That's right. And I was just talking with I have an interesting experience every Thursday where I have a world prayer organization which has an international outreach. They provide Bible study materials and electrical equipment so that people can have – it's really quite intriguing. But they have people in Pakistan. They have them in Myanmar. They have them in Africa. And they have them, several of them live in Florida and the Carolinas. And the other day, just after the hurricanes down there, he told about Pat Babstener, who's the one in charge, when he told about the incredible power that came down, there was a SUV that had landed in a tree. And they went in there, and the mother and the baby were both killed. The mother was reaching in the back to sort things out, and the water just came, and that was the end. And the same way, you know, my daughter in Italy told me I hadn't paid that much attention. The floods in Spain.
Tremendous loss of life and property.
It's awful.
And the word hadn't gotten out soon enough. Some number of these people went down to their cars in the garage. They perished there. So when you look at that and see all the terrible and catastrophic things, why doesn't God intervene and put some limits to that?
Are we not frustrated, though, when God does intervene? In a way, God can't win, because if I go to those Old Testament places where, you know, it seems like God is calling for the destruction of large Amalekites and the flood and Sodom and Gomorrah, God does step in, and the context is a pretty wicked people, right? That God is doing something about the atrocities of the human condition there. We get upset with God when he does those things. But then if he doesn't act, then we revolt against that as well. And maybe the point is we think that God's, if he does intervene, his intervention should be as measured as ours would be, and he needs to intervene more often. And he doesn't seem to do either of those. And that's been something I've had to wrestle with, the Old Testament. It's everybody, all of them, you know, the animals.
Well, I think if I'm honest, my critique usually is coming from a place of I want God to react the way I would react.
Sure.
And yeah. I mean, I never have the courage to say that in quite those words when I'm interpreting. But really, my critiques of God and my desire to either explain away or explain in the actions of God is really around I want him to do what I would do in right. those stories. And I think as soon as we can acknowledge that and state our bias in the interpretation, it can help us to realize, wow, God's ways are not our ways. Let me be cautious as I walk on holy ground trying to understand the actions of God.
But I've also heard people say that saying his ways are not our ways can also justify divine atrocities that humans then want to copy. Because if we have a God who does that, then I must be okay doing the same. And there are movements that have used the name of God who destroys the wicked, right? Crusades and so on, to justify that sort of behavior. You're not doing that.
Well, I think people rarely say God's ways are not my ways and then use God's ways to justify their ways. Usually, I think that is almost a cry of desperation, of frustration when we say, I don't understand God's ways.
Yeah.
Usually, when people commit atrocities in the name of God, it's because they're saying, I'm going to do things in God's way, and they've either misunderstand or miscontextualized what God sure. has done in the passage, is usually the way that I see it.
Let me toss in an absolutely red herring. With all these problems, why bother with God?
Tell me what you mean.
Why don't we just simply say, I can't understand it, I'll do what I can to make a difference in this world, but where is God?
Well, I think in the Bible, we're given a roadmap on how to answer that question, right? So we look at at all of the complexity of the law in the Old Testament. We look at all of the inscrutable stories within the prophets, the law and the prophets, and we hold these things up and we say, what do we even do with any of this? Should we just not even deal with it? And then there's that foundational story in the New Testament, the Transfiguration, where you have Jesus on the mountain and here appears essentially the law and the prophets, Moses and Elijah there on the mountain. And it's like we are given and metaphorically that choice that you're presenting us. And God, this voice, this rich timbre, speaks out over this comparison of the law, the prophets, and Jesus. And God says, this is my beloved son in whom I'm well pleased. Listen to him. And maybe I'm reading too much into that beautiful little supernatural encounter. But I see in that moment a guide, a light for how we deal with the inscrutable nature of the law, the complexity of the prophets. Listen to Jesus. Jesus is a lens for how we're to understand these stories, and Jesus is a guiding light for how we're to understand the God of the Old Testament. This Jesus is the guide. Jesus is the lens, and so for me, that's invaluable.
But Alden, your point is also, your question is also, and I'm glad that Albert, you sought clarification. Your question is one asked often by skeptics and atheists of Christians. How can you believe in a good God who allows such atrocities, who doesn't engage, right? And the problem is, if I go to if I accept their philosophy that there is no God, it offers me no hope. At least in the biblical text, I'm given an opportunity to see that at the end, God makes things right, that his judgment and his justice will be carried out. The atheist offers no ultimate sense of justice. In fact, they would have trouble defining it because it becomes a word that's as random as their origins, which is from nothing, out of nothing. And thus, their answers are just would not be rational either if they came out of an accident. So in my way of thinking, the biblical worldview is the one that offers me hope for the future that God will set it right, even if he's not doing it now the way I would want, right, or my way of doing things. He will do it in his way. And that hope is sure worth something to me.
Well, in my own experience, let me just give a bit more background of my comment and my question. I cannot avoid the sense of God's presence, and that's nothing I do for it. It just happens. Hmm. It's a gift of God. And I think of others who claim that they never have had a sense, and I don't know what to do with that. Because for me, acts of worship, great music does that for me. Morning worship on campus here, where we gather around the piano and sing great hymns. And of course, the sociologists say much of what we consider reasonable is largely the consensus of the people around us.
Of the group.
All of those things are very difficult. But I think when we look at this particular lesson, the rules of engagement, the lesson title here is that there are certain rules which God will follow. And he does not take advantage of everything. He stops short. He gives people the opportunity to do their thing. And there are limits that he puts on himself and on human beings. And I think that's important for us to recognize that.
We would sure wish sometimes those limits were sooner or further than they are sometimes.
That's very true. We have also here the cosmic conflict invades heaven again. This is your Daniel 10 that you were talking about. It's a very interesting passage there where I was hindered for 3 weeks, but, and this is in Daniel 10, but Michael, one of the chief princes, came to help me.
And Daniel has been praying and fasting for 21 days, and he may not even know what's going on in the heavenly realm. And that's interesting to me.
Thank you very much, Brant and Albert. And a grateful thank you to our program engineer, Kristen Byerly. And thank you for listening in for the Good Word. I'm Alden Thompson.
You've been listening to Good Word, a production of the School of Theology at Walla Walla University and KGTS-FM. To order a copy of today's broadcast, you can call 509-527-2194. Thanks for listening, and we'll be here next week at this time with Good Word.